Hey, my kitten. We are starting chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called The Secret Riddle. Katie was removed to St. Mungo's Hospital for magical maladies and injuries the following day, by which time the news that she had been cursed had spread all over the school, though the details were confused, and nobody other than Ron, Harry, and Hermione and Leanne seemed to know that Katie herself had not been the intended target. "Oh, and Malfoy knows, of course," said Harry to Ron and Hermione, who continued their new policy of feigning deafness whenever Harry mentioned his Malfoy is a Death Eater theory. Harry wondered whether Dumbledore would return from wherever he had been in time for Monday night's lesson, but having had no word to the contrary, he presented himself outside Dumbledore's office at 8 o'clock, knocked, and was told to enter. There sat Dumbledore, looking unusually tired. His hand was as black and burned as ever, but he smiled and gestured to Harry to sit down. The Pensieve was sitting on the desk again, casting silvery specks of light over the ceiling. "You've had a busy time while I've been away," Dumbledore said. "I believe you witnessed Katie's accident?"
"Yes, sir. How is she?"
"Still very unwell, although she was relatively lucky. She appears to have brushed the necklace with the smallest possible amount of skin. There was a tiny hole in her glove. Had she put it on, had she even held it in her ungloved hand, she would have died, perhaps instantly. Luckily, Professor Snape was able to do enough to prevent a rapid spread of the curse."
"Why him?" Harry asked quickly. "Why not Madame Pomfrey?"
"Impertinent," said a soft voice from one of the portraits on the wall, and Phineas Nigelus Black, Sirius's great-great-grandfather, raised his head from his arms where he had appeared to be sleeping. "I would not have permitted a student to question the way Hogwarts operated in my day." "Yes, thank you, Phineas," said Dumbledore quellingly. "Professor Snape knows much more about the dark arts than Madame Pomfrey, Harry. Anyway, the St. Mungo's staff are sending me hourly reports, and I'm hopeful that Katie will continue to make a full recovery."
"Where were you this weekend, sir?" Harry asked, disregarding a strong feeling that he might be pushing his luck, a feeling apparently shared by Phineas Nigelus, who hissed softly.
"I would rather not say just now," said Dumbledore. "However, I shall tell you in due course."
"You will?" said Harry, startled.
"Yes, I expect so," said Dumbledore, withdrawing a fresh bottle of silver memories from inside his robes and uncorking it with a prod of his wand.
"Sir," said Harry tentatively, "I met Mundungus in Hogsmeade."
"Ah, yes, I'm already aware that Mundungus has been treating your inheritance with light-fingered contempt," said Dumbledore, frowning a little. "He has gone to ground since you accosted him outside the Three Broomsticks. I think he rather dreads facing me. However, rest assured, he will not be making away with any more of Sirius's old possessions."
"That mangy old half-blood has been stealing black heirlooms," said Phineas Nigelus, incensed, and he stalked out of his frame, undoubtedly to visit his portrait in number 12, Grimmauld Place.
"Professor," said Harry after a short pause, "did Professor McGonagall tell you what I told her after Draco got hurt about Draco Malfoy? After Katie got hurt about Draco Malfoy?"
"She told me of your suspicions, yes," said Dumbledore.
"And do you..."
"I shall take all appropriate measures to investigate anyone who might have had a hand in Katie's accident," said Dumbledore. "But what concerns me now, Harry, is our lesson." Harry felt slightly resentful at this. If their lessons had been so very important, why had there been such a long gap between the first and the second? However, he said no more about Draco Malfoy, but watched as Dumbledore poured the fresh memories into the Pensieve, and began swirling the stone basin once more between his long-fingered hands.
"You will remember, I'm sure, that we left the tale of Lord Voldemort's beginnings at the point where the handsome muggle Tom Riddle had abandoned his witch wife, Merope, and returned to his family home in Little Hangleton. Merope was left alone in London, expecting the baby who would one day become Lord Voldemort."
"How do you know she was in London, sir?"
"Because of the evidence of one Caractus Burke," said Dumbledore, "who, by an odd coincidence, helped found the very shop whence the necklace we've just been discussing."
He swilled the contents of the pensive as Harry had seen him swill them before, much as a gold prospector sifts for gold. Up out of the swirling, a silvery mass rose, a little man, revolving slowly in the pensive, silver as a ghost, but much more solid, with a thatch of hair that completely covered his eyes. Yes, we acquired it in curious circumstances. It was brought in by a young witch just before Christmas, oh, many years ago now. She said she needed the gold badly. Well, that much was obvious, covered in rags and pretty far along, going to have a baby, see? She said the locket had been Slytherin's. Well, we hear that story, sort of story all the time. Oh, this was Merlin's, this was his favorite teapot. But when I looked at it, it had his mark all right, and a few simple spells were enough to tell me the truth. Of course, that made it near enough priceless. She didn't seem to have any idea how much it was worth. Happy to get 10 galleons for it. Best bargain we ever made. Dumbledore gave the pensive an extra vigorous shake, and Caractus Burke descended back into the swirling mass of memory from whence he came. He only gave her 10 galleons, said Harry indignantly. Caractus Burke was not famed for his generosity, said Dumbledore. So we know that, near the end of her pregnancy, Merope was alone in London and in desperate need of gold, desperate enough to sell her one and only valuable possession, the locket that was one of Marvolo's treasured family heirlooms. But she could do magic, said Harry impatiently. She could have got food and everything for herself by magic, couldn't she? Ah, said Dumbledore, perhaps she could. But it is my belief, and I'm guessing again, but I'm sure I'm right, that when her husband abandoned her, Merope stopped using magic. I do not think she wanted to be a witch any longer. Of course, it is also possible that her unrequited love and the attendant despair sapped her of her powers. That can happen. In any case, as you are about to see, Merope refused to raise her wand, even to save her own life. She wouldn't even stay alive for her son? Dumbledore raised his eyebrows. Could you be possibly feeling sorry for Lord Voldemort? No, said Harry quickly. But she had a choice, didn't she? Not like my mother. Your mother had a choice too, Dumbledore said gently. Yes, Merope Riddle chose death in spite of a son who needed her. But do not judge her too harshly, Harry. She was greatly weakened by long suffering, and she never had your mother's courage. And now, if you will stand... Where are we going? Harry asked, as Dumbledore joined him at the front of the desk. This time, said Dumbledore, we are going to enter my memory. I think you will find it both rich in detail and satisfyingly accurate. After you, Harry. Harry bent over the pensive. His face broke the cool surface of the memory, then he was falling through darkness again. Seconds later, his feet hit the ground. He opened his eyes and found that he and Dumbledore were standing in a bustling old-fashioned London street. There I am, said Dumbledore brightly, pointing ahead of them to the tall figure crossing the road in front of a horse-drawn milk cart. This younger Albus Dumbledore's long hair and beard were auburn. Having reached their side of the street, he strode off along the pavement, drawing many curious glances due to the flamboyantly cut suit of plum velvet that he was wearing. Nice suit, sir, said Harry, before he could stop himself, but Dumbledore merely chuckled, as they followed his younger self through a short distance, finally passing through a set of iron gates into a bare courtyard that fronted a rather grim square building surrounded by high railings. He mounted the few steps leading to the front door and knocked once. After a moment or two, the door was opened by a scruffy girl wearing an apron. Good afternoon. I have an appointment with a Mrs. Cole, who, I believe, is the matron here. Oh, said the bewildered-looking girl, taking in Dumbledore's eccentric appearance. Just a moment. Mrs. Cole, she bellowed over her shoulder. Harry heard a distant voice shouting something in response. The girl turned back to Dumbledore. Come on in, she's on her way. Dumbledore stepped into a hallway tiled in black and white. The whole place was shabby but spotlessly clean. Harry and the older Dumbledore followed. Before the front door had closed behind them, a skinny, harassed-looking woman came scurrying toward them. She had a sharp-featured face that appeared more anxious than unkind, and she was talking over her shoulder to another aproned helper as she walked toward Dumbledore. And take the iodine upstairs to Martha. Billy Stubbs has been picking his scabs, and Eric Wally's oozing all over his sheets. Chicken pox on top of everything else, she said, to nobody in particular, and then her eyes fell upon Dumbledore, and she stopped dead in her tracks, looking as astonished as if a giraffe had just crossed her threshold. "Good afternoon," said Dumbledore, holding out his hand. Mrs. Cole simply gaped. "My name is Albus Dumbledore. I sent you a letter requesting an appointment, and you kindly invited me here today." Mrs. Cole blinked. Apparently deciding that Dumbledore was not a hallucination, she said feebly, "Oh, yes. Well, then, you better come into my room. Yes." She led Dumbledore into a small room that seemed part sitting room, part office. It was as shabby as the hallway, and the furniture was old and mismatched. She invited Dumbledore to sit on a rickety chair and seated herself behind a cluttering desk, eyeing him nervously. "I am here, as I told you in my letter, to discuss Tom Riddle and arrangements for his future." "Are you family?" asked Mrs. Cole. "No, I am a teacher," said Dumbledore. "I've come to offer Tom a place at my school." "What school is this, then?" "It is called Hogwarts," said Dumbledore. "And how come you're interested in Tom?" "We believe he has qualities we are looking for." "You mean he's won a scholarship? How can he have done? He's never been entered for one." "Well, since his name has been down for our school since birth." "Who registered him, his parents?" There was no doubt that Mrs. Cole was an inconveniently sharp woman. Apparently, Dumbledore thought so too, for now Harry saw him slip his wand out of the pocket of his velvet suit, at the same time picking up a piece of perfectly blank paper from Mrs. Cole's desktop. "Here," said Dumbledore, waving his wand once as he passed her the piece of paper. "I think this will make everything clear." Mrs. Cole's eyes slid out of focus and back again as she gazed intently at the blank paper for a moment. "That seems perfectly in order," she said placidly, handing it back. Then her eyes fell upon the bottle of gin and two glasses that had certainly not been present a few seconds before. "May I offer you a glass of gin?" she said, in an extra refined voice. "Thank you very much," said Dumbledore, beaming. It soon became clear that Mrs. Cole was no novice when it came to gin drinking. Pouring both of them a generous measure, she drained her own glass in one gulp. Smacking her lips frankly, she smiled at Dumbledore for the first time, and he didn't hesitate to press his advantage. "I was wondering whether you could tell me anything of Tom Riddle's history. I think he was born here in the orphanage." "That's right," said Mrs. Cole, helping herself to more gin. "I remember it clear as anything, because I just started here myself. New Year's Eve, and bitter cold, snowing, you know. Nasty night. And this girl, not much older than I was myself at the time, came staggering up the front steps. Well, she wasn't the first. We took her in, and she had the baby within the hour. And she was dead in another hour." Mrs. Cole nodded impressively and took another generous gulp of gin. "Did she say anything before she died?" asked Dumbledore. "Anything about the boy's father, for instance?" "Now, as it happens, she did," said Mrs. Cole, who seemed to be rather enjoying herself now, with a gin in her hand and an eager audience for her story. "I remember she said to me, 'I hope he looks like his papa,' and I won't lie, she was right to hope it, because she was no beauty. And then she told me he was to be named Tom for his father and Marvolo for her father. Yes, I know, a funny name, isn't it? We wondered whether she came from a circus, and she said the boy's surname was to be Riddle. And she died after that, without another word. Well, we named him just as she'd said. It seemed so important to the poor girl, but no Tom nor Marvolo nor any kind of Riddle ever came looking for him, nor any family at all, so he stayed here in the orphanage, and he's been here ever since." Mrs. Cole helped herself almost absent-mindedly to another healthy measure of gin. Two pink spots had appeared high on her cheekbones. Then she said, "He's a funny boy." "Yes," said Dumbledore, "I thought he might be. He was a funny baby, too. He hardly ever cried, you know, and then, when he got a little older, he was odd." "Odd in what way?" asked Dumbledore gently. "Well, he..." But Mrs. Cole pulled up short, and there was nothing blurry or vague about the inquisitorial glance she shot Dumbledore over her gin glass. "He's definitely got a place at your school, you say?" "Definitely," said Dumbledore. "And nothing I say can change that?" "Nothing," said Dumbledore. "You'll be taking him away, whatever?" "Whatever," repeated Dumbledore gravely. She squinted at him as though deciding whether or not to trust him. Apparently, she decided she could because she said in a sudden rush, "He scares the other children." "You mean he's a bully?" asked Dumbledore. "I think he must be," said Mrs. Cole, frowning slightly. "But it's very hard to catch him at it. There have been incidents, nasty things." Dumbledore did not press her, though Harry could tell he was interested. She took yet another gulp of gin, and her rosy cheeks grew rosier still. "Billy Stubbs' rabbit. Well, Tom said he didn't do it. I don't see how he could have done, but even so, it didn't hang itself from the rafters, did it?" "I should think so, no," said Dumbledore quietly. "But I'm jiggered if I know how he got up there to do it. All I know is he and Billy had argued the day before. And then," Mrs. Cole took another swig of gin, slopping over a little of her chin this time. "On the summer outing, we take them out, you know, once a year, to the countryside or the seaside. Well, Amy Benson and Dennis Bishop were never quite right afterward, but all we got out of that was that they'd gone to a cave with Tom Riddle. He swore they'd just gone exploring, but something happened in there, I'm sure of it. And well, there have been a lot of other things, funny things." She looked around at Dumbledore again. Though her cheeks were flushed, her gaze was steady. "I don't think many people will be sorry to see the back of him." "You understand, I'm sure, we will not be keeping him there permanently," said Dumbledore. "He will have to return here, at the very least, every summer." "Oh, well, that's better than a whack on the nose with a rusty poker," said Mrs. Cole with a slight hiccup. She got to her feet, and Harry was impressed to see she was quite steady, even though two-thirds of the gin was now gone. "I suppose you'd like to see him?" "Very much," said Dumbledore, rising too. She led him out of her office and up the stone stairs, calling out instructions and admonitions to helpers and children as she passed. The orphans, Harry saw, were all wearing the same kind of grayish tunic. They looked reasonably well cared for, but there was no denying this was a grim place to grow up. "Here we are," said Mrs. Cole, and they turned off the second landing and stopped outside the front door in a long corridor. She knocked twice and entered. And I think we'll stop there. And I hope you like that, my baby girl. You're the sweetest, most wonderful kitten ever. I love you with all my heart. Sweet dreams, darling.